So I got some valid feedback that the question answers were going all over the place. So we will try to restrict the question answers during the course of the talk. And if we move forward steadily enough, then probably the last sessions we can focus much more on question answers. We'll have question answers, but for a limited amount of time. And in case things seem to be going too far in too many different directions, I'll do a quick recap. So this last session primarily was introductory overview of the Shiksha Ashtakam. And in that, we discussed the position of the Shiksha Ashtakam, how it is, comes at the antya of the Antalila. It is more in the mode of reflection rather than instruction. And that is in harmony with the mood of the Antalila, which is more of relishing remembrance of Krishna more than sharing Krishna's message with the world or Krishna's name with the world. So, within the Shiksha Ashtakam, there are 8 texts which are, some of them are in the mood of instruction to oneself or instruction to one's own mind. And some of them are in the mood of prayers to Krishna. But it is more of introspective meditation. So it is not like Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. It is more like the Vaishnava songs, where one is instructing oneself. And this is the Chaitanya Charitamrita is actually a book of theology in the mood of biography. And as it culminates, not so much in the historical ending of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, but in the instructions by which the mood in which he lived his life, that mood can live on in our heart also. And with respect to the 8 verses, we discussed how the first 5 talk about sambandha. They give us the knowledge of the object with whom we have to develop relationship. That is Krishna's holy name and Krishna. Then all the 8 verses themselves are abhideya. They are the process by which we can connect with Krishna and develop our attraction to him. And the last 3 verses describe prayojana. They describe the fruit of love for Krishna. So they demonstrate emotions, intense emotions in relationship with Krishna. And another way of analyzing these 8 verses is in terms of the stages of bhakti. The first 5 verses are talking about vaidhi bhakti. The 6th verse is talking about raganuga bhakti. These 2 are the stages of sadhana bhakti. 7th verse is talking about bhava bhakti. And 8th is talking about prema bhakti. The progressively more intense remembrances, intensely emotional remembrances of Krishna. And then we discussed how the Shiksha Ashtakam starts with meditation on the holy name and it ends with absorption in Krishna. So that it reveals how the Shiksha Ashtakam itself demonstrates the non-difference of Krishna's holy name and Krishna. And in that connection we discussed how first a name is simply a name for us. But when we know the person who is named, then the name triggers certain thoughts associated with that person. And then if we love that person, then the name just doesn't trigger just thoughts associated with that person, but the name also triggers emotions associated with that person. And in that sense for us, as we chant the holy names, initially it may just seem like a sound we are uttering. But as our knowledge of Krishna develops, then we'll be able to think more and more about Krishna when we chant his holy names. And as our bhakti for Krishna develops, then the chanting of the holy names will trigger also emotions in relationship with Krishna. So let's begin with the first text. So once again we'll recite together. Cheto darpana marjanam bhava mahadava nirvapanam shreya kaitava chantrika vitarnam dhavadhu jivanam आनंदां बुद्धिवर्धनं प्रतिपदां पूर्णामृतास्वादनं सर्वात्मास्नपणं परं विजयते श्रीकृष्ण संकीर्तनम्. So this verse has, this is the most concept rich text of the whole Shiksha Ashtakam. All of the verses are very rich with spiritual emotion and spiritual insight, but this is the most concentrated. That's why we'll talk this over several texts, several talks, several sessions. We'll actually go over with this first text itself. So it's all talking about Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Let this be victorious. Let it be, it is glorious. Let it be victorious. And then what is so glorious about it? That is described. So it is something like a battle cry. Now when an army is going out for fighting and they have a very powerful commander, and then the soldiers are reminded, this commander has won this war, this war, this war, this war. There's so many wars that have been won, and now let us attain victory. So like that, the glories of the holy name are described, and Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtan. So glorious is the holy name, let the holy name be victorious. Now what does it mean, let the holy name be victorious? It means it has to be victorious in our own hearts. That the holy name should conquer our own heart. And when we remember the glory of the holy name, that inspires us to surrender to Krishna. So the conquest, that when Krishna conquers it hard, our heart, it is not by force. It is by our voluntary submission. So when it says Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam, let the holy name be victorious, means we appreciate the glory of the holy name and then we voluntarily surrender to the holy name. So actually speaking, we see this in the Bhagavad Gita, that normally when there is a war, when the war is lost by a particular party, then they say surrender, surrender. So usually surrender comes at the end of a war when a warrior is defeated. But we see the Bhagavad Gita is exactly the opposite. You know, Krishna tells Arjuna, surrender. Maam ekam sharanam raja. In 18.66 he says, just surrender unto me. And Arjuna says, I will surrender. Karishye vachanam tava. In 18.73 he says, I will do your will. But after he says that, what happens? The Bhagavad Gita ends with 18.78. Yatra partho dhanurdharah. Arjuna has picked up his bow and is ready to fight. So surrender here is actually not the end of the war. Rather, surrender is the start of the war. So how is that? This surrender is not the surrender of a frustrated military general who has been defeated and who has no alternative except to surrender. This surrender is actually a voluntary offering of one's will and one's heart out of love. So similarly, when it is said, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtan, let the holy name be glorious. That means we voluntarily submit to the holy name. Oh, the holy name is such a glorious manifestation of Krishna. So let me offer my heart to the holy name. So in that way, when we meditate on the glory of the holy name, we are praying that the holy name become victorious in the territory of our heart. That means our heart submits to the holy name. And when will that happen? When we understand the glory of the holy name. And so for example, some citizen is opposing, sometimes in some countries, there may be some insurgents, some citizens who are protesting against the government, they are doing some anti-social activities. But if they understand, actually this government wants our good, and the particular head of state who is there now, he wants to help us develop, he wants to offer some good measures for our welfare, then they will stop opposing, they will start cooperating. So similarly, when we understand that actually Krishna is our well-wisher, Surudam Sarva Bhutana, when we understand Krishna's glory, then we stop opposing him, we stop resenting surrender to him, we stop resenting serving him. So when we understand his glories, the result of understanding his glories is that our reluctance to surrender changes to willingness to surrender. And when we have become willing to surrender, then the holy name conquers our heart. So, Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtana. So, let's look at the glories of the holy name which can inspire us to surrender. So, the first is Cheto Darpana Marjanam. This is a little philosophically technical. So, I'll try to make it as simple as possible. But Cheta is consciousness or mind. I'll talk about this a little bit more. Darpana, the point is, what is used here is mirror, and marjanam is to clean. So I'll try to explain first of all what the mind is, and then we'll talk about how the mind acts like a mirror. So firstly, the mind is like a window. Now what do we mean by a window? Say if I'm sitting in this room, I cannot see what is there outside. But if there is a window, then the window gives me a glimpse of what is outside. So like that, we are souls. And the soul itself cannot directly perceive material things. The soul needs some structure by which it can perceive material things. So in one sense, the senses are our connections with the outer world. But the senses are centered on the mind. In 15.9 in the Gita, Krishna says that Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam ghranam eva cha adishthaya manashchayam vishayanupasevate. So in the section of the Gita, he's talking about how the soul goes from one body to another body. In the previous verse, he stated that shariram yadavapnoti yachapi utkramatishvara grihitvaitani sanyanti vayurgandhani vashayat. Just as the wind while flowing through area catches the fragrance of that area, this whatever smell is in that area, like that the soul goes from one body to another body, acquiring certain conceptions of life. That is the previous verse. So basically this context is of the soul going from one body to another body. And this verse says, it gives a list of the five knowledge acquiring senses. Shrotram, Chakshu, Sparshanam, Rasanam, Ghranam. The eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the skin. And then it says, Adishthaya Manashchayam. All of them are centered around the mind. And Vishayan Upasevate. Using this, the soul pursues the sense objects. Seeks the sense objects. So Upasevate, actually it means the soul does the seva of the sense objects. We think I am enjoying the sense objects, but actually we are chasing after them, and the sense objects often make us dance to their tunes. So the thing is that if we consider the palm of the hand, there are five fingers and all the fingers are centered around the palm. So similarly, we have the five senses and the senses are centered around the mind. So at one level, it is the senses that are the pathways for information from the outer world to come inside. But the senses themselves cannot give us information unless the mind is there. So to give another example, say if in this room there are four windows and maybe two doors. Now from all of them, so what is going on outside is coming in. Some information of maybe somebody is walking here, somebody is talking here, some birds are flying there. All that information is there. But where my attention is, that is what I'll be able to see. So if my attention is not there, then although the information is coming in from there, I'll not be able to see the information. So like that, if you consider the five senses are channels from which information from the outer world comes in. But the mind is like the window, the main window, in the sense that wherever the mind is focused, that is what we are able to perceive. Sometimes, you know, we are looking at someone, but our mind is somewhere else. And what happens? We say, hey, what did you say? Or what happened? We often ask what happened. So what happens over there is, the senses are in contact with whatever is being perceived. The information is coming in from the senses, but the information is not reaching the soul. Because the mind is the intermediary. If the mind is not focused in that direction, whatever comes in from outside, it does not come in. So for functioning in this world, the mind is like the primary window. In this section, 15.7 onwards, when Krishna talks about how the soul is in the material world, he earlier also says, Manaha shashtani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. In 15.7 he says, there is mind and the senses, so together the six. So the mind is very important. So in that sense for us, the mind is like the window to the world. So wherever the mind is focused, that is what, that part of the material world we see, and other parts we don't see. So this is the normal way the mind functions. Now another example to understand the mind is a TV screen. Now when, say if I am sitting at my home and I am looking at a TV. Now that TV, say it is showing a cricket match or a soccer match or whatever. Now that might be happening somewhere hundreds or thousands of miles away. So what is happening over there, through some technology, that is coming on the TV screen. And when it comes on the TV screen, if I am looking at the TV screen, my consciousness through that TV screen gets transported to somewhere else. So now, although I am in that room, I am not much aware of what is happening in that room. Because the TV is through the TV, my consciousness has gone somewhere else entirely. So like that, the mind, when we say, oh, he or she is an absent-minded person, actually, it is it is not that the mind is absent. The mind is always there. But the mind is not where the body is, or the mind is not where the person is. The mind is gone somewhere else. So in that case, the mind is acting like a TV, where instead of being a window to the world around me, the mind is becoming like a TV, just taking me somewhere else entirely. So the mind can act in both ways. And this is with respect to functioning in this world itself. Now going at a deeper level, we know that the soul is different from matter. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmasu. In 13.22 in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Purusha, the soul, prakriti stohi, is caught in material nature. How? Bhunte prakriti jan gunan. Because of the desire to enjoy material things. Bhunte. So suppose, say, a child is watching a horror movie. And while watching the horror movie, a child is trembling, crying, screaming. And the mother comes and says, hey, there's nothing wrong, no need to be so scared. But the child is watching that horror movie, maybe there is some horrifying shape-changing monster. You know, he's devouring different kinds of people. Child is scared. So what has happened over there? A child could be comfortably with the mother, talking with the mother, playing something in the security of the home. But because of the desire to watch the movie, the child's consciousness got caught in the TV. And after that, it gets entangled in the TV. So, bhungte, the desire to enjoy, is what takes the person from the safety of the house into the fear of the horror movie. So, like that, the soul is separate from material world, separate from matter. But the desire to enjoy of the soul takes that soul's consciousness into this material world. And when the soul's consciousness gets caught in the material world, at that time, the soul experiences various emotions. Karanam guna sangosya sat asat yoni janmasu. Because of association with the modes, sat asat, sometimes good, sometimes bad. So we experience a wide variety of emotions in this world, in relationship to various objects, because of this desire to enjoy. Now, taking this particular example further, instead of watching a TV, we say have a movie screen in a theater. Now, in a theater, actually two things happen. When we go and sit inside the theater and the movie is about to start, the first thing that happens is one set of lights go out. All the lights in the surroundings, they go out. And then another set of lights go on. That is the light on the screen. So what these two lights, they serve two distinct purposes. First, all the surrounding lights go off. That means, you know, we can't see what is happening around us. And then the light on the screen goes on. Because that is the only thing that is lighted. So our whole attention focuses over there. And then it's almost, you know, so then it's natural that our consciousness will go towards the movie screen. And actually, if I want to look elsewhere, I have to strain. Okay, who is this person? What are they doing? So there it requires much greater effort to see that which is even next to us, because the light is much lesser. So now how the soul gets caught into matter is explained in the Gaudiya tradition using two energies. There is the Avaranatmika Shakti and there is the Prakshepatmika Shakti. Avaranatmika is, Avaran is cover. So the soul's knowledge is covered. So roughly speaking, the Avaranatmika Shakti is like the lights going off. So when the lights go off, when the Avaranatmika Shakti covers the soul forgets reality. Okay, I am a soul. Krishna is, as a Paramatma, is right next to me. I belong to a spiritual world. All this is forgotten. Just like the person, when the lights go off in the movie theater, they can't see what is around them. So Avaranatmika Shakti covers up our awareness of our actual reality. And in the Prakshepatmika Shakti is the energy that turns on the movie screen, the lights that go on the movie screen. And that, our consciousness is almost pushed towards the movie screen. And whatever is seen on the movie screen, we get caught in that. So in this case, these two energies, they both are modalities of functioning of the mind. Now we talk about Maya as the illusory energy of the Lord. Yes, and Maya is a real entity. She is the energy of the Lord. But for most practical purposes, you know, we can have an equation. Maya is equal to the mind. Maya, for almost all practical purposes, Maya acts primarily through the mind for us. Yes, there are external sense objects which may attract us, but even they attract us when our mind gets caught with them. So that's why Maya, what she does is she makes us forget reality and then she attracts us to, gets us attracted to illusion. So that Avaranatmika Shakti and Prakshepatmika Shakti, both of them are what is happening in the mind. So in that sense, the mind is the cause of illusion for us. So the mind can act as a window by which we perceive this world and we function in this world. The mind can also act as a TV screen, the whole mechanism by which our consciousness gets caught in the unreal. Now these are the ways in which normally our mind functions. So the mind is not always an enemy. Even when we are working in the world, say if I'm driving a car, I have to use my mind for concentrating. There is a traffic coming from this direction. Which direction am I to turn? So the mind is a functional necessity in this world. Now we cannot live without the mind. So the mind is an essential part of the mechanism needed for the soul to interact in this, for soul to function in this world. So that's why the mind is not like a replaceable part. Our mind is the only mind we have. So we have to, I have a seminar called, normally we talk about controlling the mind. So I have the seminar which I titled as Learning to Live with the Mind. I will talk about controlling the mind, yes, but ultimately, you know, I have to live with my mind. So the mind is something which is an essential part of our functional mechanism for living in this world. So the mind, when it functions as a window, it functions for us to perform things, to perform some activities, whatever they may be, our material responsibilities, our spiritual responsibilities. We need the mind as a functional tool. But at a bigger level, the mind acts as a TV screen by which it transports our consciousness from where we are to somewhere else. I talked about this at two levels. One is, while living in this world itself, our mind goes somewhere else. You know, say a student is studying, but while studying, they start thinking, oh, there is this football match. What must be the score? Who are all the players playing? They're sitting in the classroom or in the library or in the study room, but the mind has gone somewhere else. That is, in this world itself, the mind transfers our consciousness from one place to another. And at another level, we are souls who are spiritual, but our consciousness is transferred from the spiritual level of reality to the material level of reality through the mind. This is how the mind actually acts. At one level is a functional necessity, but another level, it is the source of, it is the tool by which we get into illusion. So now when we talk about the mind as the mirror, so what does this mean? Cheto darpana. So this is a little more intricate thing now. There is sat, chit, ananda. These are the three innate characteristics of the soul. In this, chit is consciousness. The soul is eternal, the soul is conscious, and the soul is blissful. So this chit is the innate feature of the soul. So the soul by nature is chit. But chitta, that is something slightly different. Now if we see this, what is chitta? Chitta is the embodied consciousness of the soul. Going back to the earlier, say, TV or movie example, the person who is watching the movie, that person has the capacity to look around and see, okay, who is my neighbor, who is sitting behind me, who is sitting right ahead of, left ahead of me, right ahead of me. The capacity is there. But if the person is very caught in watching the movie, is very attached to whatever is happening on the movie, then although that capacity to see other things is there, a person doesn't see other things. The consciousness is caught in the movie entirely. So, in this example, the capacity of the person to be conscious of the whole movie theater, that is chit. Whereas the consciousness that is projected into the movie, that is chitta. So, CIT chit is
the soul's original consciousness, by which the soul can perceive spiritual reality also. But chitta is the soul's consciousness that is attached to matter, and therefore the soul's consciousness gets caught in matter. And when the consciousness is caught in matter, the soul cannot perceive anything other than matter. Now we can also actually see this to some extent with whatever we are attached to. Now suppose some people are very money-minded. Then, you know, even if their birthday is there and somebody gives a very affectionate gift to them, they look at the gift and see, you know, $50. Or they look at the gift and say $10 or whatever. So what is happening? Actually, because their consciousness is so caught in money, they see everything in terms of money. So once there was an anti-alcohol campaigner. And he would go and give talks to people who were alcoholics. Now, how alcoholism is so dangerous, you should give it up. And one day he said, I'll do a demonstration. So he had a bottle of alcohol, and in a small box he had caught a fly. He had got that fly, and he said, now I'll show you how dangerous alcohol is. He opened the box, he showed them the fly, and then he took the fly and he put it into the bottle containing alcohol. And the fly just fluttered for a few minutes and then it sank into the tank and died over there. And he turned around and he asked all of them, so what do you learn from this? All of them started looking. They all knew what it meant. And just demonstrating how dangerous alcohol was. But there's one person in the audience was very cheerful. He said, so what do you learn? He raised his hand. Yes. He says, we learn that when we take alcohol, all the germs in our stomach will die.
So when we are attached to something, we basically see everything in relationship with our object of attachment in a way that is favorable for our enjoyment. So this, of course, is slightly different. It is more of a subjective interpretation of reality to support our desires. But the principle is the same, that our vision gets conditioned by our attachments. In our vision gets conditioned by our attachments. So chitta is the consciousness that is caught in matter. And this difference, Krishna also talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. Now initially in 2.17 he states that avinashi tu tadviddhi yena sarvamidam tatam vinasham avyasya asena kaschit kartum arhati. He says that which pervades the whole body, that is indestructible. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, what pervades the body is consciousness. So consciousness there, it is described, it is the energy of the soul. But then later in 13.6 and 7, when Krishna talks about Sankhya, at that time he gives a list of the elements. So first he tells the gross material elements, Mahabhutanya hankaro buddhira vyaktamevacha indriyani dashaikamcha panchachendriya gocharaha. So he describes these 24 elements, which are the kshetra, which are material nature. And then after that, he describes Ichha dvesha sukham dukham sanghatashchetana dhriti etad kshetram samasena savikaram udharutam. So the first 24 elements are kshetra, they are material nature. And then after that, what he describes? Ichha, dvesha, sukha, dukkha, sanghata and chetana. So desire, aversion, happiness, distress and consciousness. He says all these are kshetra vikar. They are transformations of material nature. Now, we may say, how can consciousness be a transformation of material nature? Now, consciousness is non-material. Consciousness is spiritual. So how can consciousness be a transformation of material nature? So here when Krishna is talking about chetana, he's talking about chitta. He's talking about the embodied consciousness. So what does this mean? You know, Prabhupada gives the example that, say, we human beings, you know, when we respond to nature, the product that comes out that is so foul-smelling that we just want to flush it away. But a soul similar to us, when that soul is in a hog's body, that soul is attracted to the same stuff. That soul may have been in a human body earlier, but the consciousness is such that the soul is attracted to that. So this chetana, this is embodied consciousness. And this embodied consciousness, with its desires, with its aversions, this is the result of material nature.
So the same thing which is considered revolting in one body, that same thing is considered irresistible in another body. This sort of Ichcha, Dvesha, Sukha, Dukkha, Sanghata, Chetana, this consciousness is the embodied consciousness. And the nature of embodied consciousness is shaped by the body. So, now say a cow is, even if the cow is hungry, the cow will not eat flesh. So why is that? Because the consciousness of the soul is shaped in such a way that the cow sees as food certain items and doesn't see as food other items. So the embodied consciousness, chitta, is shaped by the kind of body that the soul has. And in that sense, this chitta is a kshetra vikar. It is a transformation of the it is something which is resulting from the nature of the body that one has. So why are we talking about all this now? Cheto darpana marjanam. So when you talk about consciousness as the mirror, so what is this referring to? That cheto is this chitta. I'll explain the correlation now. So what happens is, based on the kind of conditioned consciousness that we have, we perceive things differently and we perceive ourselves differently. So for example, if I am very attached to money, then I see everything in terms of money, and then I see my self-worth as equal to my net worth. So how much I earn, that is what I am. I think of myself entirely in those terms. So that means our consciousness doesn't just determine how we see the world. Our consciousness determines how we see ourselves also. If I am very money minded, then I see myself as successful if I have earned a lot of money. And I see myself as a failure if I don't have enough money. That means our consciousness shapes our own self-perception. So if I am a person who is very health conscious, then if I have even a little bit extra flesh on my body, I think this is intolerable. I'll do anything and everything to get that flesh off my body. And if I'm very health conscious and I have a very attractive figure, then I think I'm a hero or I'm a heroine, whatever. So what happens? Our consciousness shapes our self-perception also. So in that sense, the consciousness, when we're talking about consciousness, is the chitta, the cheto, that acts like a mirror also. So now here, a little bit of differentiation between some concepts. See, in terms of, there is the mind, intelligence and ego. These are components of subtle body. Now when we come to the subtle body, things are so subtle, as the word itself suggests, that as far as our understanding is concerned, the difference is primarily in terms of functionality. That means if I say earth, water, fire, air, ether, you know, the earth is one particular element of a particular kind. Water is another element of another kind. But when it goes subtle realm, you know, is the mind one kind of element? Is the intelligence another kind of element? Is the ego another kind of element? Broadly speaking, it is all subtle. And we can discern it primarily in terms of functioning. So I was just giving a few days ago, before I came here, I was in Bangalore, I was giving a seminar. So one devotee asked the question, you know, why do we always talk in terms of controlling the mind? Why don't we talk about controlling the intelligence? Isn't it? So, yes, we don't talk about that because broadly speaking, the way the words are used is, there is a short-term impulsive side inside us and there is a long-term reflective side inside us. And we call the short-term impulsive side as the mind, and we call the long-term reflective side as the intelligence. So in that sense, the intelligence is what enables us to see long-term, to make wise decisions. Yeah, let me complete this. Now, Krishna does talk about how the intelligence is also the sitting place of lust. He says, Indriyani mano buddhir asya adhishtana mucchati. So the intelligence can also be taken over by lust, by selfish desires in general. And then it can also be used for pursuing sense gratification. instead of being used to control sense gratification. But broadly speaking, when the Shastra talks about buddhi, it talks about that faculty which enables us to discern. Okay, this is temporary, this is eternal, this is short term, this is long term. Now, that faculty can also be used, that capacity to discern. So, for example, that can also be used for short-term desire. Like I gave the example of this alcoholic saying that, you know, the alcohol will kill the germs in our body. So what this means is, now that answer requires some intelligence to come up with that answer. But that is intelligence that is used for pursuing sense gratification. Say, like nowadays there is with internet available all the time, you know, people often visit some undesirable sites. Now that, let me surf this site, let me see this, let me watch this, whatever. Now that impulse comes from the mind. But then after seeing that, then I think I don't want anyone come to know about it. Then I go and delete all the history. Or even before I go there, I first turn on the incognito tab. And then I go and see that. And what is happening over here? I am succumbing to the impulse of the mind, but I am using my intelligence to fulfill that impulse. So here, the intelligence, instead of being the master of the mind, the intelligence has become the servant of the mind. So Prabhupada says, we are meant to use the intelligence to control the enjoying mentality. But our problem is that we are used to enjoying intelligently. That we are used to enjoying intelligently. That means we use our intelligence to try to enjoy in a way in which we think I can enjoy and I won't get the consequences. So, why I'm analyzing all this is that at the subtle level, things may be a little, the division may not be so crystal clear. But for our purposes, we identify what is the mind, what is the intelligence, largely in terms of their functionality. You know, I cannot locate. Okay, I can locate, this is my finger, this is my legs. But I cannot locate, okay, this is my mind, this is my intelligence. They're all inside. But we understand in terms of functionality. Yes, Mata, you had a question?
I would appreciate, could you go over that again? Short-term desire, long-term desire. I got
lost. Okay, fine. Okay. Yeah, certainly. So, yeah, I know this is becoming a little heavy. But let me try to repeat it in a simpler way. Yeah.
Just because it was new,
yeah, okay.
I couldn't follow so quickly.
Okay, let me give a simple example to illustrate this, then it may become a little clearer. So actually, this example I was going to give a little later in the class, and maybe in the next time when I have it, I'll write it down on the slide also. So, say a child is sick, and the mother takes the child to a doctor, and then the doctor may just give the child some chocolate, smile at the child. But the doctor will primarily talk with the mother. And doctor will tell the mother that, okay, you have to give this medicine morning, afternoon, evening to the child. And then after that, the doctor is not going to be always there. The mother has to be there with the child, and the mother has to ensure that the child takes the medicine on time. So now in this example, can you just make a slide there if possible? Just make a new slide. I'll just write it down. So see, in this example, the mind is like the child. Anyway, I think it should be clear. No need. See, the mind is like the child. The intelligence, can that come here? Or no? Okay, fine. Okay, the mind is like the, just make a new slide entirely. So, the mind is like the child. You could just put mind equal to child. Intelligence equal to mother. No, in the same you can put one more slide. Okay, leave it then. No problem. Let it be. Okay, I think it will not work. Maybe I can do one thing. I can just sit there only. Just one minute. Are you? Okay.
We in the second half, sorry.
Anyway, no problem. Leave it.
F5.
I'll do one thing, I'll just come there. So, so the mind is like the child. The intelligence is meant to be like the mother. The spiritual master is the doctor. And the holy name is the medicine. So understanding the roles of the mind and intelligence in bhakti. So now, when the mother, when the mother and the child, they go to the doctor primarily speaks to the mother. That means the doctor is like the guru gives instruction primarily to our intelligence. So we, with our intelligence, we understand what the spiritual master is speaking. Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, vimrishyaita dasheshine ethe chisita guru. Deliberate with your intelligence and decide what you want to do. So now this, the mother hears, understands, and then comes back home, and then the mother has to make sure that the child takes the medicine. So like that, we hear from the spiritual master, and then the spiritual master is not going to be always with us. And when we are going through the normal course of our life, at that time, it is the intelligence which has to apply. Okay, this is what I should do, this is what I should not do. And the mind is like the child. The child may feel, hey, this medicine is too bitter, I don't want to take it. The child may say, I don't want to take the medicine. But then the mother has to sometimes catch the child by the mouth, you know. I take the medicine. No, I take it. So the mother may have to force the child a little bit, take the medicine. So like that, Krishna says, yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthiram tatastato niyamyaitat atmanyayosham. He says in 6.26 that wherever and whenever the mind wanders, bring it back under the control of the self. And the previous verse 6.25 says, how do you do that? Do this buddhya dhruti gruhitaya, with intelligence sustained by conviction. That means the intelligence has to be the force that will bring the mind back again and again. So in this case, the child is simply concerned with the taste. Hey, this doesn't taste good, I don't want it. The child is concerned only with short-term things. Okay, what feels good now or what doesn't feel good now. But the mother is thinking of long-term. If my child falls sick, then there is so much problems. Sickness can become a big, big problem. It may last for many days. It can sap the health, and so it can cause so many problems. So the mother sees long term. And the mother makes sure that the child does what is good, even if it doesn't seem so good at that time. So in that sense, within us, there is a side which sees long term, and there is a side which sees only short term. So the side which sees short term, that is the mind. And the side which sees long term, that is the intelligence. So we, in the process of bhakti, it is the side which sees the long term, that is the intelligence, that is what is required for us to sustain ourselves. So what Jiva Goswami says in the Sandarbhas is that for a advanced devotee, for the siddhas, they will stay in bhakti. They will stay at the spiritual platform because of their priti. Priti is love. They have love for Krishna, so they naturally practice bhakti. But for us sadhakas, what will keep us in bhakti, what will keep us in at the spiritual level, is our buddhi. So, buddhi is the intelligence. Where is it gone? Yeah. So, yeah?
Oh, can say that intelligence is superior than mind, but could we say that mind could be stronger than intelligence?
Yeah, you still can come. Does stay in bhakti by priti. Sadhakas stay in bhakti by buddhi. So priti is love or affection. So siddhas, those who already have love for Krishna, their love will naturally keep them at a spiritual platform. But for us, it is our affection, it is our
what I'm hearing from you is that mind as a media, that information passing through, getting caught, or mind is a media and supply.
Okay, good question. Very good question. I'll just come to that 1 minute. So, here we're talking about the role of the mind as just seeing short-term things and focusing on the short-term things. The intelligence is what sees long-term and then tries to guide us to act in terms of long-term things. So, is this example clear, Mataji, of how the mind and intelligence work? Yeah. So, now, coming to this question about... Now, in the hierarchy, the intelligence should be above the mind. But can the mind become stronger than the intelligence? Yes, it can. Just like in the chariot body analogy, the charioteer should be strong enough, skilled enough to take the chariot in the direction which is intended, in the direction which the warrior wants to go. But sometimes, if the horse is turbulent, and the horse starts pulling the chariot in a particular direction, and the reins will also go in that direction, and the charioteer is not strong enough or skilled enough, then the horses may take the chariot in an entirely different direction. So it can happen that the intelligence wants to go in one particular direction, but the mind becomes stronger than intelligence and it drags them somewhere else. In fact, that is what Krishna talks about. Indriyanam hi charana chartam yan mano anuvidhyate tadasya harati pragyam vayur navam ivambasi. So he says in 2.67 that the senses are wandering. Indriyanam hi charatam yan mano anuvidhyate. On whichever of the roaming senses the mind focuses. When the mind focuses on that, tadasya harati pragyam. That itself can seize away the pragya, the intelligence. And we can get dragged away in some undesirable direction, somewhere we don't want to go. So now this brings us to the point of, is the mind simply a channel of information, or is the mind also like a selector of information? So that's what your question essentially is. Yes, it is both. Like earlier I gave the example, say that in this room there are say 6 windows. Now all of them I can see something from someplace. But I can decide whether to look in this window or to look in this window. So that I give the example, say, of a child who can, there are the 2 TVs. One is some educational channel is going on, another some sports is going on. So both are there, the child chooses which one to watch. So like that, all the senses give in information to us. But the mind selects which sense to focus on. And actually the mind can select to not focus on any of the senses also. The mind can go into an imaginary world itself also. So in that sense, the mind is at one level a channel of information. But the mind is also, by channel I mean pathway of information. But at another level, the mind is also a selector of information. So there can be, see, at this moment itself, we are getting multiple inputs from different senses. So we are all, say there's some sound coming, we are hearing the sound. But along with that, some other sound may come from somewhere and our attention may get distracted towards that. Or say, if suddenly somebody brings some gulab jamun over here, and then we start getting the fragrance of gulab jamun. So what will happen? Through the ears, some sound is coming, but through the nose, some other fragrance is also coming. So then our mind may just go towards that. Where is this gulab jamun? How can I get it? When can I eat it? And then our consciousness may go completely in that direction.
So like that, our consciousness can get channeled in different directions based on the attachments that are there in the mind. So whatever is our primary attachment, so if there are two senses giving in two different kinds of information, then whichever I am more attached to, that is where my consciousness will naturally be directed. So now here, I will differentiate between consciousness itself and the mind. So consciousness is like our awareness. And the mind is what is the channel which directs the awareness. So it's like if this door is open, my consciousness will see through this door. If that door is open, I will see through that door. So the consciousness is the energy of the soul, it is awareness. And where that awareness goes, that is quite often shaped by the mind. So now, coming back to our point of Cheto Darpana Marjanam. So what are we talking about? The mind as a mirror that is cleansed. So earlier I talked about how the mind doesn't only select what we see, but the mind also selects how we see ourselves. The mind shapes not only our perception of the world, the mind shapes our perception of ourselves also. It's like I gave the example, if I am very money-minded, then depending on how much I earn, I think myself is successful or failure. So like that, when we say Cheto Darpana Marjanam, so when the mirror of the mind gets cleansed, that means I am able to perceive myself properly. So in the Bhagavad Gita 6.20 to 23 talks about the verses which describe samadhi, the state of samadhi on the path of yoga. And there it is said, yatro paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. So it said over there, yatra uparamate chittam. There the material movements of consciousness stop. Paramate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya. I'll talk about this elaborately in the next session. This is just a quick overview to conclude the session now. But niruddham yoga sevaya, by the practice of yoga, the material movements of consciousness stop. And then yatra chaiva atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. It says that by then the self sees, one sees the self with oneself, it is said. And then one delights in the self. What does that mean over there? That actually the mirror of the mind, so the mind is, Prabhupada uses the word atma, sometimes he translates as mind, sometimes he translates as self. So what happens is, then when we are purified by the practice of yoga, at that time the mirror of the mind shows us for who we really are. And when we see, oh, I am a part of Krishna, Krishna loves me even now, and Krishna is so loving, Krishna is so attractive. When we see ourselves in relationship with Krishna, pashyan atmani tushyati, we become satisfied within the self. That is the stage of atmaram, self-satisfied, as Shukadeva Goswami said to be. So what happens? When, as long as the mirror of the mind is unclean, we see ourselves in material terms. See ourselves, oh, I am less intelligent than that person. I don't look as good as that person. I can't speak as well as that person. I don't earn as much as that person. And we see ourselves in material terms, and as long as we see ourselves in material terms, we will be dissatisfied. But once the mirror of the mind gets cleaned, then the mirror shows us for who we are. So we melt, you know, if a mirror is unclean, now suppose, you know, say I am applying tilak on my face, and say there's a tilak mark on the mirror itself. Then I am looking in the reflection, I'll see some tilak mark over here. There's no tilak mark on my face, but because it is there on the mirror, I am seeing it. So if the mirror is unclean, if the mirror is spotted, the mirror is dirty, then I cannot see myself as I am. When the mirror is clean, then I can see myself as I am. So what the chanting of the holy name does is, it cleans the mirror of the mind. So when the mirror of the mind is cleaned, then we see ourselves for who we are. We see that I am a soul. I am a part of Krishna, and Krishna still loves me, and I loving Krishna, I can be happy even now. And in that way, Pashyan Atmani Tushyati. We become satisfied within oneself. So in our next talk, I'll talk about how the holy name cleans the mirror of the mind. So here we just focus actually on the point of Cheto Darpana, how the consciousness acts like a mirror. So I'll summarize and then we'll stop. So I basically talked about the whole talk was primarily focused on the mechanism of the mind. So first I talked about how the mind acts like a window. It is the channel by which we perceive the outer world. Actually, we perceive through the senses, but the senses given information, we take in that information which the mind focuses on. So the senses may give information, but if the mind is not there, we don't realize that information. We don't get it. So the mind is in that sense our window to the outer world. But along with that, the mind is also like a TV screen. The difference between a window and a TV screen is window shows what is out there actually. The TV screen takes us to somewhere else. So like that, we will be sitting in one place, but when we say somebody is absent-minded, that means their mind is acting like a TV screen. It is taking them somewhere else entirely. So the mind acting as a TV screen can happen even at the material level, where we are at one material place and we start thinking about some other material place. And in another sense, this mind acts as a TV screen in the sense that the soul is spiritual, but the soul's spiritual consciousness gets caught at the material level because of the mind. And then in that connection, we discussed about how there are these two shaktis, the avaranatmika and the prakshepatmika. So in a movie theater, first all the lights go off so that we can't see what is happening around us. That is like the avaranatmika shakti. Our awareness of spiritual reality gets obscured. And then the lights on the movie screen turn on. Then our consciousness gets caught over there, whatever is being shown over there. So like that is the prakshepatmika shakti. So first we forget spiritual reality and then we are caught in material reality. We get caught in material things. So now both these things are what happen. And these are, for all practical purposes, Maya is equal to the mind. So all these things happen in the mind. Then we discussed about how the chit and chitta are different. So a person watching a movie, they can see things around them also. But when they are caught in watching the movie, then they're no longer aware of other things. So the soul's capacity for consciousness is chit, C-I-T. That's Satchitananda. But the soul's consciousness that is caught in matter, the embodied consciousness, that is chitta. And the nature of chitta is shaped by the kind of body the person has, by the kind of conception the person has. That's why, say, a human being and a hog, they may perceive the same object completely different. Right? That is how the chitta has shaped the perception of the person. So now, when this chitta, the conditioned consciousness, that doesn't just shape our perception of the world outside. It shapes our perception of ourselves also. And it shapes how we look at ourselves. So in that connection, we have went to a direction of how the mind sees short term and intelligence sees long term. The example of the mind is like, then you remember these four things. The mind is like what?
Child.
The intelligence is like? Mother. The holy name is the?
Medicine.
And who is the doctor? That is the guru, yeah. So the mind and intelligence, that's how they see short-term, long-term. Now, the last point which we took was that when the mind becomes purified, that means in the chitta is just shaping our perception, it shapes not only the perception of things outside, but it shapes our own self-perception also. So when the chitta is shaping our self-perception, it is acting as a mirror. And so when the mirror is cleaned, that time we see ourselves for who we are. As long as we see ourselves in material terms, we'll always find ourselves in some way deficient and we'll feel unhappy. But when the mirror of the mind shows us for who we are as souls, parts of Krishna, then we see ourselves as souls and we become satisfied. Pashyan Atmani Tushyati. Thank you very much. We'll continue this in our next session in the afternoon. Hare Krishna. Chaitanya Shiksha Ashtakam Ki.
So, Janmashtami, someone asked me to announce.